This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Yes, welcome once again to another edition of Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. My name is Tim Nicholson. I'm very excited to have your company today. Massive thanks to Luke and the gang for Critical Hit. They will be back for more gaming good times next week, of course. We've got heaps coming up, so we're going to get right into it very, very soon after a very fun song. Joined by Mike Costello and Maddie Brogan today, we're going to chat with Paul Mathers from Motor Classica about that wonderful event coming up in October with all the classics and some new ones as well. Mike drives a Honda Accord hybrid and tells us all about that very, very soon. And Maddie Brogan is going to give us the hot tip on how to keep warm this winter in your car. And I'm here with some lovely men. I've got Mike Costello. Hello.
Hi, Tim.
How are you?
Oh, you know, kind of cold.
Yeah, it's a little bit chilly. It is a little bit chilly today, but you're warm, And we're warm here because we're joined by none other than Maddie Brogan.
Oh, thanks, Timmy.
It's been a while.
It has been a very long while, actually. Too long.
Have you been avoiding us?
Yeah, on purpose.
Yeah. I knew it.
We keep inviting Matt down and he keeps turning us down. It's been insulting, Matt, I've got to say.
You know, guys, it's Saturday. There's toys in the garage to play with. It's such a bad time.
You might want to qualify precisely what sort of toys you're talking about.
Yeah, that's true.
We are worried about what you are doing in your personal house.
Look, greasy toys with nuts and bolts. Nothing too personal. But toys that require attention nonetheless.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, that's good. Yeah. We're glad to have your company. We're very excited to see you. You've been doing lots of busy things with your work and driving fast cars. We spoke to your colleague Fian the other week. He told us all about some fast cars you were driving.
It was a pretty exciting event. It was one that was, you know, we weren't too sure how it was going to go down, but it was received really well. So we're thrilled with the response to it and look forward to it again next year.
That's true. Yes. And Mike Costello here drove a very fast car this week.
Oh, man, it was mind-boggling. Of all blistering. The fast supercars I've driven, you know, the Honda Accord Sport Hybrid.
Yeah.
Don't forget the word sport, because you cannot forget the word sport. I think Honda Accord, I think sport.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a new model that launched on the market, and I guess I'll go into a bit more detail a bit later on. But it's not often I drive a car that leaves me so bemused. So there's that.
We'll look forward to hearing all about that. And Maddie Brogan is going to give us the hot tip on how to stay safe this winter in your car, because you do have to be careful. There's slippy roads and all that kind of stuff. So do stick around. And, of course, the lovely Paul Mathers from Motor Classica, finding out a bit more information about Motor Classica, which is coming up in October. Lots of old incredible cars, and they've got some fantastic programs this year and some shiny new ones. So he's going to tell us what they're going to be. But in the meantime, let's get right into some weekly news, guys. I'm just going to move my little microphone because I can't see your face, Maddie Brogan. I'd like to see both of you.
There's
you
a lot of foam in front of me. It's all consuming here.
Oh, that kind of phone. I understand. Yeah. I understand. Boys, there's been a reveal this week that I feel, for me personally, has been a bit of a letdown, and that is Peugeot has finally confirmed the 308 GTI hot hatch.
What do you mean it's a letdown?
Did you see it?
Yeah.
It's a bit Dullsville.
No, it's classy.
Oh, okay.
It's reserved classy. And classy.
Do you reckon?
Yes. There's two schools of hot hatch thought. There's Larry... bright hot hatches with big body kits and spoilers and stupid bits on them. And then there's the classy, reserved, sort of demure-looking sleeper ones. Yeah. And the Golf GTI is one, and this is another.
I think Mike's onto something there. If you want to keep a low profile and stay away from those things with the blue lights on the roof, this is the way to do it.
I won't get too techie, but this is really quite a remarkable car.
Yeah.
Its engine is only 1.6 litres, which is tiny, and it's got up to 200 kilowatts.
Yeah.
Now, that is... frankly, a ludicrous amount of power to get out of an engine that's small.
Yeah.
And, you know, Peugeot has done some pretty amazing work to get it there. There's some really cool, you know, it's got some amazing racing tyres on it. It's got huge Brembo brakes. It's got a really clever front differential on it. It's got all the right ingredients to be pretty special. And as far as being a Golf GTI rival goes, on paper, it looks the goods. And from what I know about the regular 308 and the 308 GT, which is kind of the warm one, having spent quite a bit of time in both of those cars, I'd be very surprised if this wasn't a very good thing. The only concern for us is it's not 100% confirmed for Australia, because of course Peugeot, being a French brand, focuses on Europe first and foremost, and they're not going to make a whole lot of these cars. So even though hot hatches are incredibly popular in Australia, more popular here than anywhere else in the entire world on a per capita basis, there's a small chance you won't see it for quite a while. So Peugeot enthusiasts, lobby hard.
Yeah,
because
otherwise you'd be you've basically got the 208 GTI, and that's pretty much it on there in their little catalogue at the moment. But that has that same kind of thing. That's quite a sedate-looking thing, isn't it, the 208?
Peugeot's definitely going for the... But you know, Peugeot has such a long history of iconic performance cars, and Peugeot Sport worked on this, and of course they do all the rally cars. Peugeot's been in WRC, Dakar Rally, Pikes Peak Rallies, all these really, you know, famous, prestigious events, and this car really kind of stems from that DNA. So it should be brilliant.
I must say, I should preface it as well, because we've got... there are two versions of this car. One's a little bit more powerful, and that one has this fabulous paintwork. They've got some wanky name for it.
The one that looks like it's diagonally reversed into some black paint.
That's what it's done, isn't it? Yeah. Exactly. So it's got red at the front, and then it's this weird line, and then it's black at the back. That looks sexy.
You know, they just ran out of black paint. They started painting it, and then thought, oh, crap.
Well, PSA
all
does
we have
not
left
have a
is
lot
red.
Of money.
Exactly. What are you going
to
do?
Dongfeng need to inject more money into PSA.
I always forget that Dongfeng owns part of Peugeot.
Oh, how could you forget that name?
It's just the new way.
I've just got Dong on the brain, you could say. but that's exciting. Hopefully that will get to Australia at some point, but we will keep our eyes peeled. Some other local stuff this week. We found out that Mercedes-Benz will finally have a competitor for the Audi Q5 and the BMW X3.
It's probably the only weak link in Mercedes' range. The fact that it has no medium-sized SUV, which is what everybody's buying at the moment. And Mercedes-Benz Australia hasn't made a lot of friends globally because it's lobbied so hard to get the GLK, which is the current model, which was never made in right-hand drive. And that was a really bad call by Mercedes, and they've finally rectified it now. Yeah. So this is basically a C-Class underneath in a lot of ways, C-Class powertrains, very similar to a C-Class cabin, but it's an SUV body.
Yeah.
And it looks, well, I don't know. I'm kind of the jury's out, I think, on the looks.
I am too. I need
it's
to see
quite droopy
in the flesh.
It's quite,
I'm out on the looks, but you just know that badge, that size, that packaging.
Totally.
Everything else is going right for it. So if you can get your head around the looks, it'll sell. It'll sell strongly.
I actually suggested, I think you were in this launch as well, Mike, the CLA shooting break a couple of weeks ago. And I asked the managing director of the Australian Mercedes-Benz Australia whether he thought, because I just assumed that this would be like, oh, this will be their biggest seller. And I said that to him. He said, oh, this is going to be like, this is going to overtake C-Class. He's like, No, don't think so. They think that segment's like big, but it's not big enough. But I don't know. I reckon it's just going to blow everything out of the water.
You look at Q5 and wow.
That's what I think too. Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they say actually. It'll just be interesting to see if people go crazy for it. I reckon they will. Everyone loves a badge, don't they?
Of course.
Goodness me. And speaking of badges, cat sound. That's me trying to be a Jaguar. I can't do it. I can't do cat noises. So I'm just going to say the words cat sound. Jaguar, ladies and gentlemen, also had a gaping hole in their lineup, and now they have filled it with the XE, which is like a 3 Series rival and a C-Class rival.
It's really impressive that you managed to make that kind of, you know, full of... What's the word I'm looking for?
Saucy.
Seediness.
That's the best way to do it.
Of course, Jaguar is a company that's on the bounce back. It sort of had a bit of a lean trot, and it's been missing a massive part of its range. Globally, the most popular type of luxury car bought is the C-Class, the 3 Series, the A4, that sort of medium executive sedan. And the last time Jaguar did this, it had a Ford-based car called the X-Type that was rubbish, absolute rubbish. This one, however, is a different beast altogether.
Yep.
Everyone that has driven this car overseas rates it very, very highly, and that includes a number of our colleagues.
Yeah.
And it looks the business. And, you know, they announced pricing this week, so it's a tick over 60 grand, which is right up there with a 3 Series and a C-Class. It's basically parity. As you go further up the range, the value gets better because you can get more power for less than most of its rivals. I guess the question is, though, do people consider Jaguar to be in the same mold as Mercedes? Would they cross-shop the two? Is a Jaguar badge as, I guess, you know, evocative and prestigious as a BMW one? Because Volvo, of course, has tried this. So has Infiniti. So has Lexus. They've all tried to go up against the Germans in this segment, and not all of them have done so well. So can Jaguar succeed where others have failed?
Well, it's also because it's a new vehicle for them. Is it a bit cheeky that they're just going, yeah, we're just going to price it at the same as these very established?
But I mean, Jaguar is an iconic brand. Mm. It's not like it's coming out of left field. And this car, by all intents and purposes, is bloody good.
Mm.
Everybody raves about it.
I was just going to say, I think from what I've heard, and I haven't driven it, but from what I've heard, if you can get yourself behind the driver's seat, you will be won over. And it was put to me as simply as that. Like everyone that I've spoken to has said, look, it is that good. You just have to drive it. So hanging out for that one.
Yeah, all right.
Well, September 1 it launches, so we'll have to wait and see.
Exactly. Mm. We'll give you our verdict then, which, you know, as everyone knows, the Fender Bender verdict is the only verdict you should be listening to. So look, we've got lots more coming up very, very shortly. Maddie B is going to go all safety on us. So
I've got the yellow vest on.
You've got the high vis. I thought that was just to pick up tradies, though.
Well.
Either way. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Stick around. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. You have Tim, Mike and Maddie B hanging out with you on an arctically freezing Melbourne afternoon.
Mm.
But we are keeping each other warm with our beauty. I'm not sure what I'm saying.
We're all sharing one microphone, is what he's trying to say.
I was going to be even creepier than that, but I will not. I will not. That's what we're
here
for.
Be the better man, Tim.
I've never done that in my life. Why would I start now? Now, it is winter, it is very cold, and it is a good time to ensure that you are safe on the roads. I don't know the stats, I haven't done my homework, but there are lots of accidents. Even just the other night on my way home from Sandringham to the other side of town, there were 3 accidents on slippery kind of roads.
It's really amazing how a lot of people actually... It's self-evident to a lot of people, but some people aren't aware that when you're driving in the wet, you know, your brake distances do change.
Yeah.
And the car's responses do change. And some people just aren't aware that the conditions are, you know, incredibly influential on the behaviour of your car. Mm.
Yeah, I think Mike's really nailed the big one there. And it is stopping distance. And it is also that, you know, people have had 6 months of nice, dry, sticky, warm roads and tyres that will actually stop you and have probably done very, very little to their car to actually prepare it for the change in season. And it's a big tip, you know. If you're not sort of kosher with cars and you can't do it yourself, just drop down to the mechanics and say, hey, it's winter. Can you have a look at my tyres? Can you make sure all my lights are working, that the wiper blades work, that the demister's going to work? You know, all these little things that you sort of go, oh, it's winter. I kind of need those. Mm. And, oh, they don't work. And the next thing, you're stopping using somebody else's brakes. So, pays to, you know, just either go through the owner's manual and have a look yourself if you feel comfortable, or just pop down the garage and get someone to run over it. It doesn't cost that much. And, in fact, there's a lot of the, I won't name brands, but there's a lot of the tyre places that will actually check it out for you free of charge.
Really?
Yeah, so it's worth hunting them down and going and taking them up on the offer.
Do a bit of a call around.
Definitely. Yeah.
And so it's that simple. It's those kind of basic things you think that could be your undoing, like, again, like tyres or your windscreen wipers, I guess, is an obvious one.
Yeah, well, look, if you can't see where you're going, you're not going to stop. And when it does come time to stop, you kind of want what's under you to actually work. So, you know, if the tyres haven't been... especially the air pressure hasn't been checked for a long time, well worth popping into the servo and just making sure it does match up what's in your owner's manual.
Yeah.
And if they look a bit, you know, bald, maybe it's time to invest in some new rubber, and I don't mean popping into the chemist.
It's very easy to write off the importance of tyres when you have a car. You sort of think, oh, you know, they'll be fine.
They're
whatever.
Black, they're round.
It's all right.
And it's so expensive
but
often.
But tyres make a difference to every facet of the car. Mm. Fuel economy, handling, braking distance, obviously, general road holding. Mm. There is no part of the car's performance that isn't in some way affected by the tyres.
Mm.
And if your tyres aren't up to speed, you'll especially notice it in winter.
Yeah.
And I know getting a new set of rubber is pricey. What's pricier is the excess you'll pay if you crash into the back of another car because your tyres don't stop you.
That's
so true. It's sort of a inconvenient truth.
Yeah. And there's things like, you know, should people be going kind of and getting their brake pads checked and that kind of thing as well?
Your car regularly serviced, you probably don't have that to worry about as much. If you've got an older car, it probably is worth having that in the back of your mind. You know, when was the last time it was done? And if you can't remember when it was the last time it was done, it's probably a good idea. Somebody pops the wheel off and just has a look, you know.
Yep.
Like I said, most of the time, it's probably not going to cost you anything or a whole lot.
Yeah.
For somebody that knows what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, stick their head in there and go,
and have a squeeze.
Have a look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything people can do themselves, or do you think that it's more appropriate if you know what you're looking for to do it yourself?
Look, I think if you've got a very basic understanding or even the most, you know, if you can pick up a hammer or a drill around the house, you've probably got enough now to check your tyres, to check your wiper blades, and, you know, to walk around your car and say, oh, gee, there's a blown light globe there. Maybe I should pop into, you know, the local servo and grab one and replace it.
Yeah.
It's really not that hard. Yeah. Your owner's manual can generally talk you through that sort of stuff. So, you know, look, give it a go.
Yep.
The worst that's going to happen is it's not going to work still, and you're going to have to pop down to the garage and maybe spend half an hour to get it done.
Yeah.
And look, the other thing is just keep your vision up. You know, look a little bit further ahead than you usually will. Don't look down at your phone.
Yeah.
Don't get tempted to play with the sat nav or get off Grindr. Just, you know, but don't just look at the car in front. Try and look 3, 4, 5 cars in front and just see what's going on. Because as Mike said, it's going to take you longer to stop, especially if it's just started raining and the roads are just starting to get a little bit slick.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think we live, or the way that people drive these days, I just feel is so selfish, and then everyone's really just kind of focused on themselves, and it's rare to find a driver that is aware of their surroundings. And we, you know, we have to be with our job and that kind of thing as well. But I think so many people just on the road are just out, I've just got to get to work, and that's their sole focus, and they just don't concentrate on the job that they're doing in
their
car. And
if I could just add one more thing to that, Tim, is that, you know, it not only takes longer for you to stop, but have a really good think about your friends in semi-trailers and in B-doubles and that sort of thing. You know, imagine it takes us sort of another 5-10 metres longer to stop in a car.
Yep.
You times that by, you know, another 60 tonne, and those guys have got a lot of work, so stay out of their way.
On that, I noticed this the other day. It was raining, and I was in a car, and the mirrors, the external mirrors, had water on them, so they were kind of hard to see. With the windows, that side windows also had water on them, so it's kind of not great. And there was a motorbike to my side, and I know you're a motorbike rider, Matty B, and that's something to be really aware of as well, is cyclists in the rain and people on motorbikes, because they're twice as hard to see when it's nighttime and it's raining.
Yeah.
It's bad enough when it's not raining, but when it's raining.
Look, there's some great products out there, like, you know, Rain-X is an old tried and true favourite. You can just pop into the auto shop, you take it home, clean your glass and pop it on, and it will sort of help that water bead off and help you see out. So, you know, clean your glass, clean your headlights, make sure everything works, and, you know, just get out there and be safe.
Exactly. That's what we're saying, just be safe. But if you do have any questions, or if you've got any queries that you want answered about safety and winter kind of preparedness, we would love to hear from you. Text in 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. Maddie Brogan will be here for the next 35 minutes to answer your questions. And he will do
great radio voice.
You know, I like to do that sometimes, just to throw it in there. So thank you, Maddie B. That's much appreciated. Now, just going back to a little bit of news, speaking of engines and that kind of thing, can you guess who won International Engine of the Year this year?
Well, it would be unfair of me to feign ignorance, because I'm actually aware of who won.
Just tell us.
Well, it's interesting. For the last 3 years in a row, it's been won by Ford's EcoBoost 1-litre three-cylinder engine, which finished second this year. And it was won by another three-cylinder engine of sorts, BMW's i8 plug-in hybrid powertrain, which, as the name would suggest, is a hybrid car that can be plugged into a wall. So it's got an electric motor, got a generator, got a battery pack, and got a three-cylinder petrol engine. And the i8 is, you could say, the first electrified supercar. Mm. It looks like nothing else on the road. It's an amazing bit of machinery. But the interesting part of it is, in third place was Peugeot Citroën's 1.2-litre three-cylinder, which means the top three positions were all occupied by three-cylinder engines. And of the 11 categories, not one was a diesel. All petrols or electric cars. And the Tesla Model S won a category, the Ferrari 488 won a category. So, you know, there was a wide spread of cars that were victorious, but none of them diesel. And the first 33 pots.
Yeah.
Sign of the times, maybe.
A little bit.
Mm.
Well, do you think that they were aware that the BMW i8 won Fender Bender's Raddest Car of the Year award last year?
I think they repeatedly asked me to be on the judging panel of the International Engine of the Year for that reason, and I had to rebuff them, because obviously it'd be a conflict because I'm part of Fender Bender's award panel, and you know we can't spread ourselves too thin.
No spreading here. That's what I've always said.
No, but the i8 is amazing. It's an amazing car. There's nothing else quite like it out there, and it's good to see it's getting the recognition that it deserves.
It's true. Some other news was there's been some changes at the top in the Kia Hyundai group. Now, this one is interesting because, so for the listeners, Peter Schreyer, who came from Audi, became the head designer of Kia and changed that company, really.
Well, Kia was really clever. They realised their image was terrible. Mm. Nobody liked Kias. And they went and hired the guy that designed the Audi TT, one of the most iconic cars of all time, drove a dump truck of money to his house, I assume, because they'd moved to Korea or you know, spent a lot of your time in Germany and designed cars for us. And Kia's design renaissance was incredible.
Yeah.
And he then went to Hyundai. And he's still there and he's still doing great things. He's very senior in the company, but he's almost due to retire. Like Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon. He's getting a bit too old for this. I don't know if this is official, but it's certainly all the chatter is that his replacement has been found. And it's a guy with a rather hilarious name that I'm looking forward to saying very much.
Good, because I don't know how to pronounce it.
Luke Dunkerwolke. Dunkerwolke.
That sounds about right.
Yes.
It sounds like what it looks like.
He's a Volkswagen staffer, a Bentley designer. What has he designed exactly? What are some of his signature designs?
Oh, now I
assume should
the
Bentley
know this.
Continental.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And there were a couple of Volkswagen things. Nothing as iconic as Peter Schreyer and the Audi TT. I read the list and to be honest, can't remember, but there was nothing that made me go, oh, wow, that's impressive. I was just like, yeah.
But that's
nothing,
probably what
nothing
you
else.
Want. Somebody that's, you know, conservative, progressive, but not over the top. I think they've,
They've
had that, and it didn't work. So let's just try and, you know, just work at it slowly, bit by bit. Don't be too...
Yeah.
I think the best thing about this guy, Mr. Dunkerwolke, is like all car designers, he has a rather signature fashion sense.
Mm-hmm.
This man would not be caught dead without a stylish skivvy on, often a white skivvy.
He rocks the skivvy
with the suit jacket, and it's sort of a bit Steve Jobish, but you know, it's a white skivvy with a suit, and the rather pensive expression. Not the strange tortoiseshell glasses, like a lot of designers seem to favour.
No.
But he does look like the Fifth Wiggle.
He does look
when
like
he dresses
the
up
Fifth
in
Wiggle.
His skivvy, so that's exciting.
He does. He looks quite amazing. And what I just don't understand, though, is it's now such a cliche for an automotive designer to have this get-up, and... Matty Brogan, you are currently wearing what I would suggest is a pair of glasses that you would see. I love them. I think they're fabulous, but they could potentially be
the thick black
designer glasses.
Well, I'll give it a go. Got a biro handy.
But it's either that. It's either one or the other. And this guy is... I'd love to see an automotive designer really conservative suit.
Just like an old triple-breasted suit.
Mankini, I reckon.
Well, depending on what they look like.
The car would probably look like a Homer, but... Yeah.
That's very true. That's very true. Now, very shortly, we're going to talk to the lovely Paul Mathers and get all of the goss, the lowdown, if you will, on Motor Classica. So make sure you stick around. This is Fender Bender, Tim, Mike and Matty Brogan here with you. And we are also joined on the line by the very lovely Paul Mathers from Motor Classica. Paul, are you there?
I'm here. What a nice intro. The very lovely. I'm going to... on that for years.
Well, it's all true. It's all true. You're very lovely, and I suspect you're very busy as well.
Oh, well, no, not too busy to talk to you.
Oh, bless your cotton socks. Well, it's great to talk to you, and obviously we've been following Motor Classica for the last few years and watching it grow over the last few years, and I think it looks like it's going to be growing even further come this October.
I know, isn't it exciting?
Yeah.
I think that right at the beginning we were there and, you know, 5 years ago or 6 years ago, coming up 6 years ago, didn't even know if it had happened. And now, you know, we've kind of almost become the default motor show for Australia, which is really exciting.
That is fantastic. And, you know, from a perspective of new cars as well, that's been slowly building and is obviously going to ramp up this year as well. So a few more manufacturers lined up to show some new product this year.
13 so far this year, so that's kind of exciting. I mean, you know, the manufacturers, at least the Prestige and Exotics, they were always a big part of the plan for Motor Classica. It's just that it's taken some time for that to come to any kind of real critical mass, I suppose. And yes, you know, a number of them have jumped on board this year. We've got, Porsche, Alfa, Lotus, Ferrari, Maserati, BMW, Citroen, Morgan, Mini, Jaguar, Mercedes-Benz. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah, it's all happening. And so they've obviously seen the success that some of the other car makers have had in the past at bringing, you know, a new product to a, what is essentially a classic car show and jumped on. So that's good news.
Well, I think what they've got is that they've recognised that they've got something over some of the other brands out there, and that is heritage. And they've got long track records and big stories behind them as well as brands. And they've also recognised that Motor Classica is a place that they can come to talk to a really targeted group of people that really care about motor cars. I mean, I had this conversation with somebody the other day. I think the average visitor to Motor Classica looks upon their motor car as an extension of themselves. You know, just like we, you know, we define ourselves by the way we dress or the house we live in or the people we mix with. Mm. We define ourselves also by the cars that we drive. And that's a... That type of audience is a very informed audience, and it's not the sort that I think the manufacturers were used to seeing at, say, a traditional motor show.
Mm.
But when they come along the Motor Classica, that's exactly the type of audience they see. So I think it's been quite an eye-opener for some of them.
Yep.
And of course, the others have jumped on board because they see that it's working.
And do you think, would you guys kind of require, for any car company coming along that wants to show some new stuff, do they have to have a bit of history, do you think?
Yeah, look, to be honest with you, I think that that there's some brands that aren't going to meet their target market at Motor Classica, and so we'd probably advise them that it's not the show for them. I'm sure that there are lots of other opportunities for those types of brands. But, I mean, if you're wanting to get to a mass market of people that are using cars just to commute from A to B, then and they're buying cars at a certain price point, then, you know, perhaps Motor Classica isn't for them. But certainly for those prestige brands and for those that market themselves as lifestyle brands, then absolutely, you know, we'd like all those types of brands in. And you know, who's to say what history is? I mean, we have, you know, you look at a company like McLaren, which really, as a road car, has not been around for very long, but they've got a fantastic story behind them. And I think that, you know, that's what it's about. It's about fabulous stories as much as history.
Mm. But do you think it would get to a point where you kind of go, all right, well, that's enough. We've got enough new car brands and kind of cap the number of other brands that are showing stuff like new metal there?
Yeah, I think that that's inevitable ultimately. I mean, we can't afford to lose our main focus. This is a show for car enthusiasts.
Mm.
And people that want to see that historical stuff. So, you know, I would never sacrifice a position for a car in our Concours d'Elegance to put in a manufacturer stand just because somebody wanted one. That is just not going to happen. You know, for the last 6 years, we've had 104 cars in Concours, 30 cars for auction, and somewhere 40 and 50 motorcycles in Concours, and it will be like that in another 5 years' time too. That part's not going to change.
Yep. And do you anticipate that you'll always have enough room at the exhibition centre? I mean, you might need more space, Paul.
Yeah, that's always the challenge. I mean, at the moment, we're investigating the possibility of putting cars up on the gallery level, which is quite interesting. Now, in the old days of the motor show, you're probably too young to remember, and I didn't live here, but they used to actually have car displays on the gallery level of the Royal Exhibition Building.
Mm.
So we're just going through a bit of a process there now to see whether that might be viable. And if it is, then...
I think he was going to say something then, but it sounds like we've lost him, but that's
all right.
I think he did walk into a tunnel. That was the very lovely Paul Mathers on a mobile, but look, there's not much...
On a bad mobile.
And there he is right now. And I don't know how to answer that phone, so that's super awkward. Bear with us. Hello?
Hi, just dropped out.
And you're back.
I'm back.
That was amazing. I can't believe you called back. Paul Mathers has returned.
Sorry?
That you've returned. That's fabulous. Oh, it just came through on another phone. I got very confused, but we're glad to have you back. I was just going to ask you about, we're talking about all the new cars and stuff that are going to be shown there.
Yeah.
Getting back to the classics, what are you guys highlighting this year?
This year's a really cool year, and I think that it's going to apply, appeal to not just the sort of old-timers like me, I dare say, but also to the younger crowd. The bigger anniversary that we're celebrating here is 50 years of the supercar. So we're taking the Lamborghini Miura, which is generally considered to be the first of the modern-day supercars, and we're celebrating 50 years of that. So you're going to see a number of Ferraris there, you're going to see a number of Lamborghinis, and then you're going to see some interesting one-offs like the Pagani Zonda and the Koenigsegg CCX and the McLaren F1, the Jaguar XJ220 and the Jaguar XKR15, I think it is, which is the road-going version of the Le Mans car from the 1990s. We've got some really, really cool metal on display in that 50 years of supercar. I mean, you know, just look at that McLaren F1. I mean, Rowan Atkinson just sold his for $16 million.
What the what?
Yeah.
And he crashed it a bunch of times too, didn't he?
Yeah, he crashed it twice. Oh, so good. A car that had been written off twice could get that sort of money. I mean, I wonder what a car like this would get.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's an incredible display in itself. And then if you take the complete other end of the spectrum, well, the Bugatti Car Club of Australia is celebrating 50 years this year, and they've put together a really wonderful display of 18 pre-World War II Bugattis, ranging from the sort of entry-level Brescia, Type 23 Brescia, right through to the Type 57C Atalanta. Now, that's a $4 or $5 million car right there. So really broad range of very beautiful Bugattis, both sporting Bugattis and sort of road Bugattis.
That's very exciting. And just briefly, I know there's a couple of other motor shows that are kind of happening in Melbourne now. We saw one a few months back, and there's another one coming up, I think Motor World, it might be called, at Sandown Raceway. I know you've probably been asked this a lot. Are you threatened by these kind of shows, or do you think you guys are different enough that you stand alone?
Yeah, I don't think that we're threatened. I mean, imitation is the greatest form of flattery, right? I noticed that the show that was on a few months ago had a great big classic car display. So, no, not really. I mean, we offer something that's very, very different to any kind of mainstream motor show. Mm. The opportunity that we offer our exhibitors is really unique. The environment that we've created is really unique. And the visitor experience, I believe, too, is really unique as well. Mm. So, no, I don't feel threatened by it. I don't really think about it a lot, to be honest.
Yeah.
They're doing what they're doing, and, you know, I, like any car-loving punter, will probably go to those shows as well.
Yeah, okay. Excellent. Well, that's good to hear. There's no bad blood.
No.
Absolutely. Look, Paul, it's lovely to speak to you as always. Now, where can tickets on sale yet or not quite yet?
Tickets are on sale now.
Get out of town.
On the website at www.motorclassica.com.au.
Fabulous. Excellent. Look, well, good luck with the show. We'll hopefully we might even speak to you again closer to the time or while it's on. Who knows? But have a fabulous show this year, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you. That is Paul Mathers, of course, from Motor Classica. We've got heaps more coming up, and I'm strapping myself in to hear about the Honda Accord Hybrid Sport, 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 Sport. This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. And you have Tim, Mike and Matty Brogan here with you for another 15 minutes or so talking cars. We get to drive cars in our jobs, which is very, very, very exciting and fun. And sometimes we get to drive great cars. Sometimes we get to drive cars that are a little bit flawed. And we like to talk about both of those, you know, from one end of the spectrum to the other. And we're going to talk a little bit Honda. We're going to go deep inside of Honda right now.
Honda. Well-known brand, well-loved brand for good reason. The BMW of Japan for many years.
They were, weren't they?
They really were. And in some ways still is. In some ways, although in fewer ways than perhaps it used to be. And Honda's run on some hard times of late. It has shown some good signs of recovery in recent years. It's launched some pretty interesting product. The HRV Chief among them.
this week it launched the Honda Accord Sport Hybrid. The interesting thing about this car is Honda was a bit of a hybrid pioneer in Australia. It was among the first, if not the first, to introduce a hybrid car in Australia with the Insight in 2001, that weird, funky car with wheel spats on the back, if anyone out there remembers it. And that car and the Toyota Prius were really the trendsetters of the whole hybrid movement. Over that ensuing time, Honda has had a number of hybrid cars in Australia. At one point, it had up to four models, which made it perhaps the second largest hybrid producer to sell cars in Australia. However, it discontinued all of those progressively up until about February of this year because they were all getting a bit long in the tooth. And for the past few months, it hasn't had a hybrid car at all. It's now changed that. And that's why the Accord Sport Hybrid is important. Now, I say sport hybrid, and I don't know why I say sport hybrid, because despite the badge, this is not a sporty car. This car sits at the top of the Accord range, and ergo, it sits at the top of the Honda range. It's the most expensive Honda you can buy, and the price is frankly ridiculous, $58,990, which puts it square against the Lexus ES Hybrid and ahead of the Lexus IS Hybrid, both of which have proper claims to being luxury cars, whereas the Accord, does it? I don't know. It's really more of a Mazda 6 rival. It's a premium car, a luxury car, not so sure about that. It's interesting, though. It's not the sort of hybrid that Honda traditionally sells, which is a mild hybrid. This is a part of, it calls it Earth Dreams. That's its name for it, which is interesting. But it is very, very clever. It's got two electric motors, one a supplementary, one a primary. And it's got a non-traditional gearbox that's sort of a CVT, but sort of not. And it can consume about 4.5 litres of fuel every 100 km, which makes it the most fuel-efficient mid-size car you can buy anywhere.
Well, that's an impressive claim on its own.
That is an impressive
And apparently
claim.
The tech is, yeah.
The tech is good.
Yeah.
In reality, it drives just like a Camry hybrid, which is less premium, because you can talk about all these fancy features that this car has and other hybrids don't. Ultimately, it has the signature hybrid thing, which is it's punchy off the line, all that electric motor, all that torque from zero RPM, quite thrashy higher up in the rev band, a CVT that has that incessant clutch-slipping drone about it. It has all the signatures of a hybrid car. It's very spacious inside. Its cabin's really nice. The elephant in the room, though, is the Accord V6 is $7,000 cheaper and a lot faster. And the Accord 4-cylinder is, well, up to $25,000 cheaper.
Cheapest.
And no slower. And no less spacious. And has a bigger boot.
And but they don't have a sport badge.
That's true.
That's the difference.
That price differential buys you a lot of fuel. Now, Honda has made no secret of the fact that it thinks this car is a Lexus hybrid rival. Lexus has the ES and the IS. The IS is a bit cheaper, the ES is a bit bigger, and a touch more expensive. Both those cars are proper luxury cars. Yes, it's a Toyota underneath, but they've got the sort of cabin quality and design the Honda just doesn't have, the sort of refinement the Honda just doesn't have. And let's be honest, the badge cachet the Honda doesn't have either. Honda's being a bit ambitious here, and it's kind of unfortunate that the hybrid cars Honda has offered over its history here haven't sold very well because they were too expensive. The CRZ, the Civic Hybrid, the early Insights, all too expensive. And it's fallen into the same trap with this car as well. It's not that the Accord Sport Hybrid is a bad car. Quite the contrary. It's an impressive car in a lot of ways. It's just that it's $20,000 more than a Camry Hybrid, which is essentially the same thing. And it's the same as a Lexus. And you just can't charge that kind of money. So,
do you think, though, Honda are potentially Honda offering this car as like a Lexus, a Legend replacement? Because that car ended, you know, whenever that was, a couple of years ago.
Well, I was just going to say, Jim, I think if this had have wore a Legend badge and obviously the body, well, perhaps it would be justified and it would be a Lexus or an Infiniti rival. But to whack it on an Accord badge, as Mike said, you're in Camry territory. you know, I'm sorry, but. Yeah. Are people really going to cough up that kind of money to save a little bit of fuel?
And I guess the question is, with that sport badge, have they done anything to kind of tweak the suspension or anything? Is there anything sporty about it?
Well, the car's heavier than a 4-cylinder because it's got all that electric stuff in it. So, yes, they have to change the damper settings, but it's predominantly for that. For all the company's claims of, you know, aluminium bumpers and things which save almost no weight, there's no sportiness to its performance. It's comfortable. It rides okay. It's a bit noisy. It's certainly not sporty. Not even by a long stretch. Again, it's not a bad car. Really, what this car is a branding thing. It's Honda saying, look, we have a hybrid.
Yeah.
This is a company that was a hybrid pioneer. And you can never take that away from that company.
True.
But it's fallen on tough times lately. It's not doing as much as it should be in terms of innovation, in terms of design. And it's not the brand that it was. And this is a kind of good example of that.
Do you think we're going to see, much like all of the other hybrids in their range, that in a couple of years, the car will actually, yeah, we've just quietly discontinued that variant?
Absolutely. And this is only going to be sold in 5 dealerships, one in each major city of Australia. They're only bringing a small number in. It really is a marketing tool. They're not even talking sales projections of any sort. So it's really, you know, if you look at this in the cold, hard light of day, it's a bit of an odd one.
I think a lot of car company executives are also marketing tools, but listen to it.
Look, topical. Again, Honda, you know, a lot of great stuff out there. And but the regular Accord, not a terrible car. This even isn't a terrible car itself. It's just way too expensive.
But on that note, I guess looking at Honda as a whole brand, and I guess picking out the Accord as a really good example, the weird mid-size segment, which is kind of on the decline, has some really solid options in it now. And, you know, maybe when the Accord was released a couple of years ago, that was right up there. But since then, you've had some quite appealing
kind of things
come into that
segment.
This
is the year of the mid-size car.
Totally.
An updated Mazda 6, we have an updated Camry, we've had a new Hyundai Sonata, a new Ford Liberty. Mondeo, new Subaru Liberty, new Volkswagen Passat around the corner, new Skoda Superb just around the corner. I mean, every single mainstream car in that market is being replaced.
Yep.
And it's amazing because, like you say, people aren't buying those cars quite as much as they used to. But you can't have mediocre product, and you can't have a product that's too expensive, and that's precisely what this is, which is unfortunate.
But then again, so you've got the kind of two sides of Honda, and you've got some of the product that is actually really, really terrific. We've talked a bit about the HR-V. I think that is the pick of that segment.
Great little car.
I'm such a fan of that
car. And it's selling up a storm.
And that's keeping them afloat,
isn't
it? It's
only been on sale for half a year, and it's already the company's top-selling car. It's doubled the Civic sales. It's ahead of the CR-V. It's ahead of the Jazz. Yeah, it really is driving that
company.
And
I think from a financial point of view, that car had to work for them. I reckon that in many ways could have been a bit make or break, you know, and fortunately, it's just a fantastic little thing.
And again, we've talked about this on the air before, but I think those magic seats that they do are a real selling point. I think that, you know, if you're kind of tossing up between one of two cars, whether it's a Jazz and a Mazda 2, I think that would be enough to kind of push people over. So they've got these incredible innovations, the technology you talk about in that the Accord, and I've heard a number of people say that this week, the tech is really impressive. It's just about how they harness that and become sexy again. Can Honda become sexy and appealing again? Is that possible?
Well, there's always talk of, you know, there's a new Civic next year. They've got these new turbo engines they're going to premiere, which I was lucky enough to drive in prototype form quite a long time ago now. Should have arrived by now, haven't. That's that typical conservatism that drives that company. But there is some stuff on the horizon that looks interesting. There's the new NSX coming around the corner. There's probably going to be a sub-NSX sports car of some degree. Look, Honda's always talking about it. It's doing F1 again now, which is a really good return. But until these things materialize, you really can't be sure. No. We can sit here and say and hypothesize that Honda's, you know, return is nigh, but until we see it...
Yeah.
You can only call a decision on what you can see, and right now it's not very impressive.
That's true. But you know, it's such a great brand. It'd be good to see them kind of flying again. So we will keep our eyes on Honda. We will. But boys, it is time to shut it down. Yeah, it is time to pass the baton to the boys and the girls from Technogaze. So Maddie Brogan, thank you so much for joining us again.
Pleasure, mate.
Lovely to see you, and hopefully people are feeling a lot safer after hearing your dulcet tones as
well. I hope so.
That's it. Mike Costello, thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
Oh, please. We will be back next week with a lot more of the motoring goodness that we like to provide here on Fender Bender. In the meantime, do keep yourself safe on the roads. My name is Tim Nicholson, signing off for Fender Bender. Safe driving.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.